Welcome to the Perfume Podcast, creativity, scents, inspirations. He is a coach who has founded the Core Gift Institute for helping people find their own sense of purpose. Today is with us Bruce Anderson.
Hi, Ellen. It's so glad to be with you this morning. It's early here and it's late there. It's perfect. Just perfect.
Yeah. It's really perfect. And so my first question for you is this. Your life is deeply connected with seas and islands. And can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, I've always been attracted to water. And so I've tried to live on the water. Since I was 17, I've lived very close to the water, yeah, every place that I've lived in my life. And I didn't understand it for a long time, but as I've thought about it more, I think that I'm interested in where things meet and what happens. And so islands have a lot of that going on. They have the water meeting the earth. And they have people traveling to and from, and the islands have boundaries. And so I like the edges of things. I've always been attracted to the edges of things. So islands have a lot of edges because they have a lot of shoreline. When I was a commercial fisherman, I realized quickly that when I was fishing for prawns or shrimp, what do you call them in Italy? Are they shrimp? Are they prawns? Are they, what's the Italian word?
I think it is gamberi. Gamberi.
Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
So the best place to fish for them is where the ocean floor is flat and where it comes towards an island and it goes up then for the island. When the tide changes, that edge where the island begins to come up off of the seafloor, because of the tide, it creates this vortex, this circular motion, and it stirs up all the feed on the ocean floor, and the shrimp like that. So right at that edge where the ocean floor meets the island is very productive for fishermen. And I think that's true in life too. The edges are where it's most interesting all the time. It's where the people in trouble of some kind live. It's where the excitement really is. It's boring in the middle.
I love that. Yes, you're giving me an image of edges as really as places full of movement and exchange also maybe.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good word for it. It's a good word for it, exchange. And the last thing about islands that really draws me is the images of Earth being symbolic in so many cultures for Mother Earth and nature and welcoming and love, and water being the universal symbol for forgiveness. And so I have this image of water meeting the Earth and forgiveness and love coming together. And it just strikes me that's the most powerful place that I can live in on a daily basis in my life is in the union of those two things.
Mm, I like that very much. Yes, also a great symbol of connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And also you told me that you worked also in Alaska.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about that kind of environment? Yeah.
Well, I wanted to go to Alaska my whole life because it was wild and it was where there weren't a lot of people and it sounded like adventuresome. So when I graduated from college, I went to a small village in Alaska, Pelican, Alaska, about 300 people. I went to teach school. I was very excited when I did my interview on the phone for the position, and I was so excited that they said yes. And then I got there about a week after I got there, I found out I was the only person who applied for the job. It wasn't that I was so qualified. I was thinking, oh, they really see who I am. They really want me. And it was more, no, no, we need you here. Just come now. So I was way too young to be a teacher. I was only 21 years old, and a lot of the students in the school were very close to my age, and I was just too young. So I just taught school for 1 year and then developed a really special friendship with a couple of people in that town who were fishermen, and they encouraged me to buy a boat. And so I bought a fishing boat, and I did that for 6 or 8 years. And then I went into what happened was, which was interesting for me, was that my wife said, I don't want to live in a small village anymore. I want to move to a bigger town. And I thought that I would, I thought I would be able to stop us from doing that by saying to her, okay, I'll move to a bigger town, but I'm not going to move anywhere that you can drive your car to. And I had this image of being way out in the wilderness somewhere where you walked in on a path to your cabin in Alaska. And the next week we were in a much bigger town, Sitka, Alaska, eating dinner with some friends, and they had discovered that there was an island for sale just offshore, about a mile offshore in Sitka. And they had two small kids, and they decided they didn't want the trouble of having to take their children in a boat to school every day. And so in that moment, my wife said, well, you can't drive a car there, so we need to buy that island. So we did. Within a week, we owned that island and built a house on it and put in a dock and lived there. And so it was, wow. You wonder, you know, as you get older, you when you're younger, you think these are just lucky breaks. But when you look back at the path of your life, it's pretty clear some things have a larger plan that you're often not aware of when you're in the middle of it. So I'd always loved islands, and all of a sudden we were the owners of an island. So it was one of the best times in my life, just the best times in my life. So.
Yeah. I can imagine also the connection with the environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. It becomes really, I don't know, but I have a beautiful feeling about that. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really quite something. Yeah, yes. So I learned in Alaska, it's the kind of place, one of the reasons I really like it is that the kind of place where your credentials aren't as important as what you can actually do. It isn't so much the college degree you have as whether or not you have crafts and skills and abilities to do things. Alaska is much more of a place for people like that than it is for people who want to move forward in life with their degrees and their credentials. I'm not saying that those things aren't important, but I like the fact that it's not the main criteria for moving forward. So, and also in Alaska, there's a lot of people who could not survive in rural Alaska. There's a lot of people who could not survive in a big city. They're too much of troublemakers, you know, both good trouble and bad trouble.
Yes.
You know, in the village I lived in, there were no police. There were, you know, it didn't have the usual kinds of rules. So people really had to take care of each other and make things work. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say one more thing, Elena, that was a big learning for me. I had never before in my life been in a living situation where I had to live around and see people on a daily basis that I didn't like. And in a small community, you're walking by people all day, and you have to learn how to get along over time. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, want to be a person's best friend, but you have to learn about hospitality and genuinely caring that people who are different from you and may have values that you don't agree with, very strong values that you don't agree with. You have to learn how to coexist. And I think in the United States, we're losing a lot of that now. There's so much animosity between people who have different belief systems. And I think part of that is privilege, that we are able to surround ourselves by people who are just like us. And I think that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. So anyway, I learned that first in Alaska.
Wow. Yes, I was just thinking about, nature and biodiversity. Nature is so powerful because it has so a great biodiversity. So never only, you don't have in a garden or in a forest only trees who join, and they not necessarily like each other, but they live together. And this togetherness maintaining the difference, mm-hmm. This is very alive for me. It's about life. Mm-hmm. 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 Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I like this very much, because also I'm thinking that staying only with people that we like might be something a little bit disempowering, let's say, mm-hmm. because a little bit of challenge is helpful yeah. in growth.
Yeah. When we have, some of our friends, they come over for dinner and we spend 3 hours around food talking about what we agree about.
Yeah.
It's not a very interesting conversation, really. There's no diversity of opinion. There's nobody saying, what are you talking about? That sounds ridiculous. It doesn't happen, and that's where you get the juice to build community through differences, not through similarities. And so, so anyway.
Yeah. And what about core gifts? Because your work is really about core gifts. Can you tell us a little bit what a core gift is?
Well, I came to become interested in this work initially through two ways. One is I joined a group of men who were putting on events that were meant to draw young adults, young men, between 16 and 20, 23 or so, together with older men. And these young men were people who were at serious forks in the road. They were affiliated with gangs, or they had not decided what they wanted to do with their life. They were at some kind of serious fork in the road. And the idea was to gather the older men and the younger men together and try and help them make some sense out of their lives. And what I noticed about those events after doing quite a few of them was that young men were really attracted primarily to two things. They were attracted to large bonfires. Sometimes we would have trouble. We would go to these old rundown church camps in the middle of the woods, and they had these old rickety cabins, and we wouldn't start in the morning until everyone was in the main meeting room, and sometimes the young guys wouldn't come to the meeting, and so we would just wait. And one thing we discovered is if you built a fire, young men are triggered by fire. It's dangerous. They're burning up. They have heat in them. They're trying to dissipate and figure out their life. So if you build a big enough fire, young guys will come to that. And the other thing that I noticed is that if you got below the level of talking with them about going to school or reconnecting with their family or staying out of legal trouble, all of those things they had heard millions of times before. If you got to the level of questions like, you know, two of your friends have been shot. Why do you get up in the morning? Why is it worth it for you to keep going? If you got to that level, every young person that I talked to would respond in a genuine way to that question. It may have been with anger, it may have been with thoughtfulness, but that's a question about purposefulness. Why are you in the world? And one of the things we would talk about would be, and Michael Mead would tell old stories, mythological stories were stories about how people found purpose in their lives. And so I began to see that the conversation we really needed to have with people at big forks in their life, forks in the road, were conversations about purposefulness rather than what you want to do next. That conversation, the conversation about what action you want to take, is meaningless unless it's tied to a deeper purpose. And so that's the English word for that is genius or gift. There's a lot of words in different cultures, but we adopted the word gift for that. And so we have been working on different ways for people to know their gifts for 25 years now. And we use the term core gift because we believe, Elena, in you, a very gifted person, that there is one gift that matters most to you, more than all of your other gifts. And if we can help you figure out what that is, it becomes the connecting thread in your life. And that kind of the calmness that comes from that and the challenge that comes from that is the lifeblood that keeps a human going, we think. And so we've been very focused on that idea of a core gift.
Yes. For example, which is the relationship between creativity and the core gift? Because I sense that they are really intertwined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it has to do, to me, that has to do with with the idea of a wellspring, that there is a wellhead, there's a wellspring, and your core gift is really the seed that propels you through your life. And so it also is the seed that you go to for imagination. And if you get very far away from this core gift, you lose your imagination. There's something in your psyche that says, get back on the path. You're dying because you're not on the path. And when you get back on that path of your gift, the world begins to open up. You begin to see things. You begin to see interconnections between things. I know with my core gift, since I'm so focused on it, I notice a lot of things around me every day that I wouldn't notice on a conscious level if I didn't know my core gift. And so I'm naturally accumulating experiences and observations and seeing beauty in places where I wouldn't ordinarily see it. And so I think it's just, the possibilities are so much more if you go back to that seed gift. So I think it's tied to, I also think that it's some of the difference, Elena, between fate and destiny. Fate is just stuff that happens to you during the day. And destiny is stuff that happens to you that's part of a larger path in your life. And I think we're supposed to be following our destiny. And I think blessings come to us when we're on that path that would not come to us if we weren't on that path. So there's a mystery to it that we can't pretend to understand. But it's a good thing.
Yeah. I'm feeling as if finding the core gift would really help to connect the dots in your life. So really find a purpose, but it's wider, I would say. It's wider. It's really like having a kind of container for your everyday experience. Mm-hmm. And you can have that experience because you are aware in some way. Mm-hmm. So there is a kind of ongoing awareness that in some way catches Yeah,
I could look back in my life. You know, I didn't know my core gift until I was, you know, more than 40 years old. And as I looked back in my life, I could see how everything was connected. And I had no awareness of that while I was going through it at all. And I had some feelings of sadness about that, that if I would have been aware of that, I could have, it would have brought more joy to my life, because here I'm seeing this now, and look at that. And here's this next thing opening up. Isn't life beautiful? And instead I saw my life as a series of interesting things, but not interconnected really. And that's really the power in it, is seeing the threads, people call it. How is your life woven together?
Yeah. Yes, I think the also sadness and other moods or emotional situations really happen because we don't feel the thread.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because in my experience, if I can't feel the thread, also if I'm living something not really easy, let's say,
mm-hmm.
but I can still contain, I can still understand in some way the experience.
That's a big idea in gifts, Elena, that knowing your gifts, it doesn't mean your life will be easier, but it means that the trouble that you will find is a good kind of trouble, because it questions your path and makes you re-decide the path is worth it. And when you figure out any difficulties on that path of your gift, then you get wiser about your gift, and it helps you with the next trouble that you run into. So it's very instructive and calming when you know your gift. Yes.
Yes, yes. And do you have any insight to share about how we can improve our connection with others while preserving our own unique identity?
Well, my fundamental answer to that, I think there's a lot of answers. That's a community building question. But my fundamental answer to that, which won't surprise you, Elena, is that since we've lost this idea of core gifts in the world, there's a few, you know, indigenous cultures that still have practices to identify gifts, but it's an idea that's mostly lost in the world as the world's gotten industrialized. The main way, if we lived in a village, 200 years ago, people were connected by the knowledge of each other's gifts, that they relied on each other for certain things, and they were seen as wise about certain things and capable of certain things. And so people's identity was based, this is such a big idea to me, people's identity was based in their uniqueness. And now, in a commercial and industrialized culture, our identity is based in how much we're the same as everyone else. You know, every kid in a high school in America is conscious of the fact that if they have the certain kind of tennis shoes, they'll be more accepted than if they have a different kind of tennis shoes. That the idea of commercialization has made identity about sameness rather than uniqueness. And so I think that's my basic answer, is that we have to get back to a place where we appreciate uniqueness. When we were growing up, when our kids were young, my wife and I were at that time doing a lot of work with people with disabilities, people who had been shunned and were not working, were clustered in homes away from where other people lived. And it really bothered us a lot. And we wanted to raise our kids with the idea that uniqueness was a good thing. And so when they were very young, you know, 6 or 8 years old, our two kids, when we would go to someone's house for dinner, or someone would come to our place for dinner, as soon as we left, we would get in the car at someone's house. And before I started the car to drive away, I would just simply say, duck or odd duck. And in our family, that's an American phrase. I don't know if it's a phrase for you, but an odd duck is the duck that flies out of the pattern when geese and ducks are flying in the air. It's the one that can't quite stay in alignment with that beautiful triangle that you see geese and ducks flying in. So I would just say duck or odd duck. And that was a code for our kids to start describing what was interesting about those people and how they were different. How were they odd ducks? How didn't they fit in? And they got very good at it. And it was our way of just trying to say, what's interesting is people's differences. It's not how they're like us. And so I'm just in love with that idea that we have to get back to that place where the first thing we notice is a loving acceptance of difference rather than how are you dangerous because you're different than me. So, and that's, I mean, it's a gift. I hate to, you know, keep going back to it. It sounds like a broken record, but that's a gift related idea, which is at the heart of community building.
Yeah, absolutely. I always thought that it's almost impossible to build a community. So to create a group, if each individuality hasn't been respected. Because then you can't, let's say, you can't build a we if you don't have many I. Mm-hmm. If you don't have many individuals, mm-hmm. but not because it's an egoistic space, but because, as you're saying, it's a uniqueness that you have to respect and that is fully alive also. Mm-hmm. Because for me also, when you say the core gift and this uniqueness, you're talking really about aliveness and being alive and have this energy. Mm-hmm. Having this energy, mm-hmm. because if you become like someone else, you're losing yourself.
Oh, that's so powerful, Elena. Yes. Yeah. And we're so drawn in a commercialized culture to sameness. Yeah. And we get complimented for that.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It's like being complimented. It's like you're saying, good job. Now you're getting more boring every day. Good job. We hope you can be more boring over the course of your life rather than unique.
Yes, we are praised for that. Yes.
You know, it's also tied back to your other, you know, curiosity, Elena, about creativity. You know, creativity, you know, one of the fundamental rules is when you want to be creative, you have to leave the circumstance you're in, whether that means leaving what you're thinking about now or walking outside, or you have to go to other places. And so if we're just trying to stay in the same place all the time in our mind or where we live, it's very difficult to be creative. We need the prompting. Somebody had another word for it that I loved a few days ago, but I can't remember what it is now. We need a nudge. We need a prompting. Oh, it was you, Elena. you had a word. It's on a sheet of paper that I don't have right in front of me here.
But you, are you sure?
Yes. No, I'm sure it was you, Elena.
Oh my goodness.
But it was in that category of a prompting or a nudge or a little push, just to get outside of what's familiar.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So yes, I could talk with you, I think, for 1 or 2 hours, but anyway, thank you for this interview. And I think we're going to talk again.
I hope so.
In a while.
I hope so. Yes, I knew when I first heard you speak, Ellen. I'm fascinated by your story and by your fascination with islands. I know you're doing some developmental work now in coaching and helping people move forward in their life around the the mythology and the idea of islands. And so I'm fascinated by that and appreciative that you keep pushing those edges. You know,
Thank you.
You are not you are not the usual kind of coach that I meet every day.
This is a great compliment.
It is a good compliment. Most coaches are problem-solving coaches. And I think you're operating at a deeper level than that with people. And and I really appreciate that. I appreciate you making the time to be in a dream state and a creative state enough to take work with people to a level that both surprises them and gives them opportunities that they couldn't have if they weren't working with you. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. My respect.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bruce. So yes, we'll talk again soon.
We will.
And thank you to our listeners, and we'll meet soon for new episodes of the Perfume Podcast. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Elena.
Bye.
You listen to the Perfume Podcast. If you're interested in creativity coaching and finding your unique path for expressing yourself, please check my website, archipelagos.space, because each of us is an island, but we are not isolated at all.